Welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Watch us live every Sunday morning at 9:30 or 11:05 a.m. at gosblive.com. Or visit us in person. You can find directions at gostonebridge.com. Connect with us on our social media at facebook.com/gostonebridge and our Instagram at SB Church.
Well, we've been looking at the story of Joseph in the Old Testament. We've called this a journey to forgiveness. And one of the things that you probably recognize about your life, I certainly recognize it about my life, is a lot of people will talk about the destination, right? Where you're going. And is that important? Sure it is. I mean, is life about the destination? You know, a lot of people would say yes, and it's pretty hard to argue with that. And then other people will say this, maybe you've thought this, no, actually life is about the journey, because it's in the journey that you become, you know, who you are, and that's the most important part. So here's where I will fall. I think it's both. I don't think you can separate the two. I think the destination and the journey are just parts of the same thing. And as you look at your life and I look at my life, is the destination important? Wow, yes. Joseph's father was Jacob. And Joseph's father, Jacob, he understood the destination. In fact, so much so that when his brother, who was older than he was, when he realized he would gain the inheritance, he would have the blessing of God, or blessing of his father Isaac upon him. It was a very special thing for them to be given this blessing, this mantle that was passed on, that he knew that was important. And so he found a way to take that from his brother, to trick his brother, if you remember the story, as he came in, he's famished, into giving him his birthright, and then to tricking his father into blessing him, giving him the blessing, because his father was old and couldn't distinguish, you know, exactly who was who. So that Esau, his brother, when he came in and found out, the father said, I've already given the blessing away. He wept and said, is there no blessing for me? Because my brother has stolen my blessing. So Jacob was a man who understood destination. He knew we're trying to get somewhere, and he knew how important where you ended up was, so that he would get there no matter what the means, right? But God is in the process with Jacob of changing him through the means and getting him there and reshaping who Jacob is. When you look at the story of Joseph, Jacob's story, his father's story, is so tied into Joseph's own story. You just can't separate them, because they're both a part of the destination. And as you look at Jacob's life, you realize that they're also a part of how you get there, what you become as you move in that direction. I've called this the for all those who have lost hope, because I love this part of the story. I know that this is the part of the story that most of us don't know as much about when we look at the story of Joseph in Genesis, but it is so powerful and it's so important to see how it turns out in the last part of this story that we're going to finish in these next 2 weeks. And the first part of it really is about hope in Jacob's life. Because Jacob has continued to do things many times the wrong way. And God is still shaping Jacob's life. And at some point right before this, Jacob realizes that his sons have to go back to Egypt, including Benjamin, now his youngest and his favorite. And he doesn't want to lose Benjamin. And Jacob finally sort of breaks. He just sort of breaks, saying, if I lose all my children... But see, for him, it wasn't just the land, it was the children. This is the destination. This is the whole point of it. And God finally brings him to this place where he's just broken. You ever been there? You know, I think that that's one of those things that many times we get toward the end of life before we fully get broken in a good way. Broken enough where we realize we can't fix it the way we want to fix it. We can't manipulate it. We can't make it happen, even though our nature is still to try to do that. And we have to trust God, that God has a plan, that God cares about us, that God wants us to be a part of His plan, and He will continue to work that. That's why I put in your outline that with hope, it's always a question of why and where. And then I'm going to add a what in there. And you can see I just did a who. So anyway, but it's always I'm trying to be funny. Okay, I just want to make sure. You understand. And it is important because the real question in my heart and yours is, so why should I have hope? Why shouldn't I give up? Why should I go through enough disappointments and enough things that don't work out that I just sort of quit? And in one sense, God does break us down with that, you know, to get us to a genuine sense of hope. And the other question is, where am I going to find hope? Where is there going to be something in my life outside of myself that will bring me hope and will cause me to hold on and to move forward? And then I did put in there, if you're really honest, there's this struggle that we have. What if I don't deserve hope? What if I don't deserve it? I was listening to a story of a lady who suffered abuse. And when she was asked, you know, why didn't you leave? And then, you know, a lot of people said, well, she couldn't leave. And then she admitted, she said, here's the hold that it has over you. She said, honestly, I looked at my life and I said, I don't deserve anything better than this. And this is the part that God comes in to change for us. It's not in the sense of deserving that we just deserve better. It's what God decides to give us, even though at times we don't deserve it. But because of how much God loves us and He cares for us, God gives us even what we don't deserve. There are plenty of times you deserved better and you didn't get it. But in this case, you know, God comes in and steps into our lives, especially into Jacob's life. And after all that Jacob has done, all the hurt and pain he has caused with his brother and with his family, and he had to leave his family because of it. In one sense, Jacob would have to look at his own life and say, do I really deserve this? And God has a plan for Jacob's life, just like he has a plan for your life and my life. And it would be easy to fall into that trap of missing the hope that God has for us because we look at our lives and say, yeah, but I don't deserve it. Yes, that could easily be true. But God still has a plan, and God changes the way you see your life, and when He does that, He's going to change the way you see the lives of other people also. So here, we're in this 45th chapter. We're ending up in the 45th chapter of Genesis, and if you don't know the story so far, if you're just with us, it's the story of Jacob's son Joseph being sold into slavery in the land of Canaan. In fact, I think we'll have a map pop up. Wouldn't be a bad time to throw it up. There it is. So this is a different map, shows you Israel. And this upper part here is where, in the land of Canaan, is where they lived. And he's sold, and he's taken down into Egypt, and he's sold there into slavery. But God watches after him, takes him to the house of Potiphar, on to jail, where he gets thrown in jail where he shouldn't, and eventually ends up interpreting dreams for Pharaoh. And he becomes the guy that runs all of Egypt through 7 incredible years of profit and produce, and then 7 years of famine like they had never seen before, but he manages it, and he becomes a very powerful man, only to find his own brothers coming from the land of Israel and coming down into Egypt looking for food. They have to have food. He recognizes them. They don't recognize him because, as I said before, he walks like an Egyptian. He talks like an Egyptian. He looks like an Egyptian. Of course he does. This is the land he must live in. This is the place he has. But in his heart, it's one of the amazing things about Joseph's story. Joseph, in his heart, is a follower of Yahweh, a follower of God. And God is with him. And he doesn't let go of that, even though this is the land that he serves in. So he has to send his brothers back. They get his brother Benjamin. They come back. And as far as Jacob is concerned, it's all over. You know, they've gone and they may never come back again. And then this is what it says in verse 16. Now, when the news was heard in Pharaoh's house that Joseph's brothers had come, it pleased Pharaoh and his servants. Now, I think this is interesting because this is God once again moving the heart of a king, the heart of Pharaoh and all of his servants. These are Hebrews. These are those who keep sheep. These are shepherds and herdsmen. And as we read last week, the Egyptians would not even sit at the same table with sheep herders because they hated them. And it says in verse number 17, then Pharaoh said to Joseph, say to your brothers. So this is, you know, him telling him what to do. Say to your brothers Do this, load your beast and go to the land of Canaan. Take your father and your households and come to me, and I will give you the best of the land in Egypt, and you will eat the fat of the land. Now you are ordered, Pharaoh's still speaking to Joseph, you are ordered, do this. Take wagons from the land of Egypt for your little ones and for your wives, and bring your father and come. Do not concern yourself with your goods, for the best of the land of Egypt is yours. Then the sons of Israel did so. That means the brothers, they did this. And Joseph gave them wagons according to the command of Pharaoh and gave them provisions for the journey. To each of them he gave changes of garments, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments. To his father he sent as follows: 10 donkeys loaded with the best things of Egypt, 10 female donkeys loaded with grain and bread and sustenance for his father on the journey. So this is, you know, when they're going to show up, the last thing that Jacob remembers is sending gifts down to this they called the man, and it was actually Joseph, but they sent gifts to the man, and all of a sudden they're going to come back with gifts from Egypt, clearly from Egypt, wagons from Egypt, so they would have looked like that, and they're bringing all of this back up into the land of Canaan for the father to bring him and to prepare for this journey. Then it says this, verse 24. And don't think because we went through the whole first half of the outline this fast that we'll go this fast. And it says this, verse 24. So he sent his brothers away, and as they departed, he said to them, do not quarrel on the journey. Anybody want to speculate why he put that in there? I'm not going to either. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think Joseph certainly knew that his brothers were fighters and they were strugglers. He says, do not quarrel on the journey. It says in verse 25, then they went up to Egypt and they came to the land they went up from Egypt and came to the land of Canaan to their father Jacob. Now listen, this is where the story sort of takes a turn. It's all been about Joseph in a lot of ways, and now all of a sudden the story goes back to Jacob, because Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is the line. These are the patriarchs, and the patriarchs were given promises, right? And these promises from God, as God has spoken to them, is what the nation and the people have built their lives upon, even though they're really a small band. Here we are, 3 or 4 major generations away. They're just a small band living in the land of Canaan. So it kind of looks like, I don't know what the promise about being a nation was all about, and about, you know, expanding lands and all that, but nothing has really happened. So maybe, you know, this was just something that they dreamed up, or they thought they heard from God, and people a lot of times think they hear from God, but all of a sudden they go back to Jacob, and he's going to bring Jacob back into the story in a way that Jacob has not been a part of the story before. Jacob's old. That's encouraging to me, right? As we get older, Jacob's old. It doesn't mean you're out of the story. In fact, in some ways, it actually means you're a bigger part of the story now than you were before. Why? Because there are those who have come after you that you've had a chance to influence, hand things down to, the promises Jacob has handed down to Joseph and to his son that they may not have really fully caught. The brothers may not have yet, but it was still there. And Jacob is one of those that near the end of his life, because I'm guessing that Jacob is in his 80s, maybe 90s at this time. He actually lives to 130 years old. And when later, a couple of chapters later, when Pharaoh actually addresses him about this, he says, yeah, I didn't do too well. Not like those who came before me, who lived a lot longer. Where Pharaoh's going like, whoa, what is going on, man? That's a long time to live. And they did. Those herdsmen, a lot of them had really long lives in where they were. And Jacob all of a sudden is going to be pulled right back into the story through this, where he thinks it's over. He thinks, no, you know, hope is gone. That's been his language as they left. All of a sudden, he's pulled right back into the story with this incredible scene of his brothers coming back, wagons from Egypt, all of these animals and things coming back to him. He's got to be thinking, what in the world is going on? In fact, look, here it talks about his Jacob's reaction. It says, they told him, Joseph is still alive. I wish that it goes into a whole lot more detail, about how the brothers try to explain this more to their father, right? Because this is one of those things that explain how he can be possibly, you know, but they just kind of leave it. The writer leaves it here. Joseph is still alive. And then he adds this, and indeed, he is the ruler of the land of Egypt. Now, it says he was stunned. This is Jacob's reaction. He was stunned, and he did not believe them. Anybody okay with that? I would be okay with that. Jacob knows his sons. He knows what they're like. He has seen many times the treachery that his sons have put on other people. In the story of Jacob in the Old Testament, you'll see it's honest about it. And some of the things really grieved his heart, and some of the things really angered him that his sons, he knows his sons. Why have you come up with a story like this? You know, there's no way I can believe this. I gave up my son over 40 years ago, believing that he was gone, and now you've come back to you know, injure my heart even more saying this. And then it says in the next verse, verse 27, when they told him all these words of Joseph, then he had that he had spoken to them, and when he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father Jacob revived. That's hope. The spirit of his father Jacob, it changes. It picks up in his old age. All of a sudden, the things that he thought were gone, all the promises that he thought maybe, you know, like most of us, he had worked out how those promises were about to work out in his life. They didn't work out that way, but now there's a whole new avenue of hope, a whole new reason to hope that is really greater than how Jacob would have pictured it or how Jacob would have imagined that it could have happened. And it says in 28, then Israel. Now, Israel is Jacob, same name. Israel is the covenant name of Jacob. And I know you think, well, Abram, his name is changed to Abraham. This Jacob's is different, because when Jacob gets a name change, he's given a name that has to do with the nation and the family and the promise. And this becomes the name of the nation Israel. It's also his name, but this is why you see him referred to as Jacob, but at the same time as Israel. And the author here says, then Israel. He's pointing out again that covenant, that promise that he's given. Then Israel said, it is enough. It is enough. My son Joseph is still alive. See, for him, that's the promise. That's the hope ahead. He thought it was over. He thought it was gone. My son Joseph is still alive. Remember when Isaac is given to Abraham? Isaac is the son of promise, born to Abraham and Sarah in their old age when they could not have children, never had children. They're, you know, Sarah is 90 years old. He's 100 years old, and he has a son. And then God tells him in his teenage years, go up and sacrifice your son. How can you sacrifice the promise, the one that has given you hope, your last chance? And he tells Abraham, I'm just putting you to the test. I'm seeing, do you understand and do you trust me, or are you going to try to still work it out your own way? And it's a brutal test, isn't it? A tough test to do this. Well, Jacob is going through the same thing. He has lost his hope and thought he lost all of his sons, and now all of a sudden, Joseph is still alive. He says, I will go, and I will see him before I die. So you see this incredible shift in Jacob, and I like to think of it this way. In fact, I bet there are people here that this will apply to you. Jacob is embarking on a brand new adventure. It's still part of the same promise, but this is not the part he thought he would go on. This is not something that he ever envisioned. In fact, Jacob's life has been spent down, you see where Beersheba is, all the way up to, actually a little bit above this, all the way up to Haran. That's been his whole life. He's never gone anywhere except there. He's never been to Egypt. He's never gone to these places that others went to. This is his life. And for him to all of a sudden to agree in his old age, I'm going to Egypt, and Jacob understands, Jacob knows, I will go to Egypt and I will not return. Well, how does that fit the promise? How does that match up to what God has said, the promised land? Jacob is learning in this new adventure. He is being stretched by God that the promise is bigger than just a piece of land. The promise will be bigger than even just his own family and his own people, even though this is the promise. But the promise is bigger than that. It was made to Abraham also, because God told Abraham, he says, I will bless all the families of the earth through your family. So he's stretching him. He's pushing him out of the naturally formed barriers that he puts on his life and that you and I tend to put on our life and say, this is the way it is. In fact, that's one of the reasons God disappoints us sometimes so much. Because we have decided what God must do and what he will do. And some people even come to a theology, and I'll push it a little bit, where they have decided and they have declared this is what God will do. So God is bound. God is not bound. And it's a good thing, isn't it? Because if God was bound by us, and God was bound by our ability to dream, and if God was bound by our words, we would be a sorry lot. We would. But God pushes us. He stretches us. He shows us things that only God could accomplish and God could do to bring the wonder of our lives and the wonder of how much God loves us back into focus. Let me tell you what it also does. It overcomes the feeling that I don't deserve this. It's not the point. The point is God created you. He gave you life, and God has plans. And the real question is, will you believe him? Will you trust him? And this is Jacob sort of taking his stance and saying, okay, let's go do it. I'm up for this. Don't know what it will look like, what it will feel like, but I'm up for this. So look, here's in the next chapter. Chapter 46 begins like this. It says, so Jacob set out for Egypt. I love that. He sets out for Egypt and all of his possessions. This means he has found a new direction in his life. It was different than how he thought it would be. There's a new resolve with Jacob. He takes all of his possessions. He's not leaving anything back in Canaan. Everything's going with me. I'm going to this new place. And it says, and when he came to Beersheba. Now hold on to that for just a second. This is a location. When he came to Beersheba, he offered sacrifices to God, to the God of his father Isaac. So what is Jacob doing? He's linking it back now to his father Isaac, who is no longer here. He's linking the promise back of God to his father. And it says, and during the night, God spoke to him in a vision, Jacob, Jacob. He calls. So this is what he does. He goes to Beersheba to worship God. This means he's going to say thank you, that your promises are bigger than the way I have worked them out and the way I understand them. Thank you that your desire and your will and your ability to accomplish what you want to do is way beyond what I can accomplish or what I can dream. Not that what you try to accomplish isn't important. God wants you to dream and have ideas, but he pulls us into his ideas that are so much bigger, and he gives us a place in those plans that he makes as because he wants to honor us in that way by pulling us into this relationship. And so he worships in Beersheba, and then also new visions, new understandings, new ideas. God gives him new dreams. Same dream in a sense that, you know, God has given him, but a new understanding or a new working out how these dreams are going to be accomplished. I think that's a big deal. I do. I told you I'd go back to Beersheba for a minute. So Beersheba is down south. And this is a sort of a famous place. Abraham went to Beersheba, and Abraham digs a well in Beersheba. And the name of Beersheba kind of gets its name probably from Abraham's well because there he meets with a king named Abimelech. There, it's his land, and they're kind of struggling over this. And he cuts this deal with him. And Beersheba means, in Hebrew, Beer means well. B-E-E-R. Beer means well. And Sheva actually means promise. So this is the well of promise. That's what this place is named. It's because Abimelech and Abraham cut a deal there. They have a relationship kind of, this is how we're going to work it out. And so it's part of a promise that is given, but it's also about the promise that God gives them. Physically, if you go down to Beersheba, this is like the last stop. You ever been in one of those on the highway? Your last chance to get gas, right? Or usually it's from Buc-ee's. Your last chance to stop at Buc-ee's. You know, you won't have any more chances for 100 miles or something like that. And this is kind of the last stop as you go down to what is called the Negev. The Negev is like a desert wasteland area. And if you want water for your journey, and you know you're going to have to travel through this, and he's going to travel down to Egypt, you stop in Beersheba because of Abraham's well that is there, and you load up on water at this place of promise so that you can make the rest of the journey. It's very, you know, much the meaning of it very tied to what he's about to go through and what he's about to walk through. And so, you know, here's God speaking to him and saying, Jacob, Jacob. And here's what Jacob says. Here I am. Or really, he's saying, I'm here. I hear you. You got my attention. Yes, he did. You got my attention. You know, I see things I never saw before. I lift up my life to you. I'm worshiping you as I've never worshiped you before, because I understand that you do things that I cannot do. You have plans that I didn't understand or couldn't have figured out, because it's you and your will and the power of who you are that moves the hands of pharaohs and moves the debris of life out of the way. This is where hope comes from. It's from you. And it says in verse 3, this is God speaking. The voice says, I am God, the God of your, say it with me, the God of your what? Yeah. The God of your father. You can't take that link out. He's going all the way back. In other words, this is the same idea as God saying, I was here before you were here. I was here before your father was here. I was here before your grandfather was here. I will be here after you're gone. I will still be working out my plans. You see this all through the New Testament. Same idea, understanding of God. He who was, he who is, and he who what? Shall be. Right. That's who he is. And he has called us into this small time to be a part with him, but it's a part with him, of him, because of who he is. He's calling him in and saying, this is the God that I am. He says, do not be afraid. Now, why would he say that? Because we are afraid of the future. What is coming? What is the world turning into? Will we ever get past our divisions and our struggles? Will we ever find a reason to be united again? Will we ever find a reason to be kind to one another again? Will wars ever cease? Because, you know, it just seems like there's always someone coming in and saying, I want what you have, and I'm going to take it from you if I have to. You know, will any of that stuff ever cease? And if it's just us, if it's just humanity, I always love to ask people, so how do you think it's going to work out if it's just humanity? My son, when he was doing some studies in college and in high school, he worked on all this, because as a young person, you work things out. And my son figured it out. He says, this is the only way it could work, Dad. I said, what is that? He said, the only way to bring peace and to get everybody to do the right thing is you need a leader and an army, and he makes them do it. I said, yeah, that doesn't work very well, does it? Because then the people who are being made to do it eventually rise up and say, you're not going to make me do what you want me to do anymore. I mean, yeah, that's humanity. So if God doesn't invade the picture, and here's what I would challenge you on. If you still struggle with, but here's what I've gone through, how can I believe there's a God with what I've gone through? Listen, I would say this. So what are you going to hope in? What are you hoping in? I'm not saying that's a reason to believe in God, but I would say this. It might be a reason to stop and consider that what you think you're hoping in or what you think is going to fix it, is it really going to fix it? Has it before? And maybe that would cause you, like Jacob, to reconsider even the things that you've worked out or you've thought out and say, maybe there's something more. Maybe there is a God who watches after men and women, who created them and wants them to be a part of himself. Maybe he did shape us in his image. And maybe it would be a good idea for me to kind of humble myself and get off my own high horse sometimes and say, God, if you have a plan, if you have a reason, if something you want to do, well, it sure would be nice, even though it would be a struggle, to know and to be a part of that. It says, do not be afraid to go down to Egypt. For there, listen to this, four things he says. For there, I will make your family a great nation. Part of the promise that he's given to Abraham, renewed with Isaac, renewed with Jacob, I will make your family a great nation. He says, I will go with you. I'm not going to desert you as you go down there. The second thing, as you go down to Egypt. Number three, I will bring you back again. That means the promise I gave you, even though you say this is a detour, yes, it is. It's not the final destination. I will bring you back again. And then he says, but you will die in Egypt with Joseph attending to you. Now, I know you think, well, wait a minute. So he's talking about him. Yeah, he's going to perish in Egypt. But guess what? He's going to perish in Egypt with who? The son that he thought was dead. The one that in Jacob's mind has been resurrected. He's alive. Yeah, it says something to him about God's ability and what God understands and what God does in life. So I just to make you think, I just put this in here. Where do you find yourself stuck? Where do we find ourselves stuck? And I just thought of a few things. You might think of a few more. I tend to find myself stuck in nostalgia is one of them. And I think when Jacob goes to Beersheba, it would have been very easy to go back because Beersheba is also the city of his father, of his brother. He had to leave this area and go to the north to Haran to escape the anger of Esau. I'd be angry too, right? If your brother stole everything from you and tricked everybody, including the father. This is a place as he comes back, there's pain, there's struggle, but there's also good times there. You ever been back to where you grew up or where you were raised? A few times I'll go back to South Carolina. That's where I was born and raised. You'll say, I recognize that hick accent. Yeah, that's it. And, you know, that's where I grew up in a little town called Easley, South Carolina. When I go back, the nostalgia just hits me. I'll go back to the house. The one that I'm kind of attached to is where I'm from 3 years old to about 14. You know, I grew up, and I go back, and I remember the times. And, you know, when I think about, you know, this place and this room, and we were here and all too, you know, and I you just want to stay there, right? There's just some kind of feeling that comes over you. Until the people that own the house say, you have to leave, you know, and then you, okay, you know, because we live here now, and you know, but it just kind of grabs you, doesn't it? My wife, we went back years ago, we went back to Columbus, Ohio, and so my wife, when she was little, her dad moved them there for business to Ohio. He built two houses that he built, and so we went to the first house, and sure enough, the family was nice enough to let us in, and she knew every room. She knew the stone that he'd put in, all that. I mean, it was amazing what was still there. What really amazed her is the kitchen still the same, and you know, so it was all the same. Then we went to a big house that he built there in Columbus. It's a huge house that eventually he sold the piece of land to the Jack Nicklaus Golf Course. And they used it as a part of the golf course, and the house became was taken over by the state as a game reserve for injured animals. So we went there and thought, well, it's gone. We couldn't find it. We're looking around. You know, I've never been there before. And all of a sudden, she says, turn right here. And we go to, and there it is. And we go in this driveway and in this parking lot, only to find out this is for employees, and get out and walk in, and they go like, what are you doing here? Who are you? You can't be in here. And they listen to the story, and she described things in the house, including two wagon wheels that were turned into lights, And they were like, she really does know this house. And they let us in because this is where they work and their offices. All the other stuff is all outside. And we actually got to walk in and look around. And you just go through all these feelings of nostalgia, right? Until the same thing. They said, we got to get back to work. You have to leave. You know, they kicked us out. So that's okay. You need to be kicked out sometime. Because you know what happens when you go back into nostalgia? It's good for a little while. It's not good for very long. You go back and it's not the same as it was. Other people have their life. I was watching or reading the write-up on the Friends reunion. How many people watch Friends, the reunion? Anybody? Okay. Nobody cares about the reunion except the Friends. One of the things they talked about, they thought, how wonderful, we're going to party and we're going to have a great time. And this reunion of the show and the write-up that I read, they said it was awful. It was painful. It was such a struggle. It sucked you back into a time that is gone. And you don't want to, you know, you realize I can't stay here. I've got to go on, you know, with life. Yes, I think that's true. There's an attractiveness about living in the past. But it's a false image. You don't want to go back and live in the past. The attractiveness is you know it. You think, you know, I can control it. The future is out of control, or at least out of our control, but it's not out of God's control. So sometimes I think the nostalgia just kind of gets you sucked back in. It certainly does for me. Or maybe you get stuck in issues, or I put the word trauma here especially, and short-sightedness, because one of the ladies that wrote a book, and I've mentioned it before, you can tell as she writes a book on Joseph's life, she's really much more concerned about her own trauma and her own pain than she is the story. And I will tell you, I think that's a shame, because I think she misses, as I read her book, she misses the whole point of who Joseph is and what God is doing through Joseph, because she can't get out of her own pain and the struggles that she's gone through in life. She can't see past those to see that God has something more for her life. I hope you're not stuck there. It's easy to get stuck there. It would be easy for Joseph to have gotten stuck there and still angry at his brothers and can't let go of that pain. For Jacob to get stuck there and all the things that we all go through, traumas, difficulties, and if we're not careful, that short-sightedness keeps us from seeing who God is and what God has for us and the plans that God has for us. Or maybe, I guess it just kind of really focuses it down. What we really do is we just get stuck in ourselves, our own past, our old life, or we get stuck in our lack of not having a vision. Because we get stuck in ourselves and we don't have a vision for what God is going to move us forward to. So it says in verse number 5, so Jacob left Beersheba. I like that. He was there. He worshiped. Part of, you know, his family, who they were. But he knows this is not the future. This is not the plan that God has. So he leaves Beersheba, and his sons took him to Egypt. The language is very specific here because it's kind of a contrast to Joseph being taken to Egypt by slave traders that his brothers sold him into, and now it's his brothers that will actually have to do the work of taking their father down to Egypt to meet Joseph. He says they carried him and their little ones and their wives and the wagons Pharaoh had provided for them. They also took all their livestock and all their personal belongings they had acquired in the land of Canaan. So Jacob and his entire family went to Egypt, went down to Egypt. Everything's left behind. He moves forward, knowing that God is certainly capable of restoring and finishing his plans. I also put, as we close up, a little passage from Psalm 84. I really like this. I think that in this psalm, here's something that you will catch about what happens to Joseph and to Jacob and what's supposed to happen to us in our own relationship with God, our relationship with Jesus Christ, what Christ does for us. And in Psalm 84, just three verses, it says this is verse 5, it says, how blessed is the man. And that would, listen, it's not gender. It's, you know, with the man or the woman. And this idea of being blessed means how much this person, when they arrive at the end of life, will be so grateful for the life that they've gone through, for where God has taken them. And they'll be happy about it and say, wow, man, this is wonderful because of what God did. How blessed is a man whose strength is in you. That means ability to keep moving, to keep trusting, to keep going forward, in whose heart are the, catch this, the highways to Zion. That's the idea of the promised land. And in their heart, God has formed and shaped them so that they can go that direction. And so that, you know, as you have a chance to be around other people who are struggling with hope, listen, there's something inside of you that guides you and pushes you forward, that they say, I need what you have. Even Paul tells Timothy, he says, always be ready to give a defense for the hope that is in you. It doesn't say be ready to tell everybody what they're doing wrong or to chastise everybody or try to fix the world. It says just always be ready to give a defense for the hope, the way to Zion that is inside of you. Then he adds this. Look at this verse. You'll like this. Verse 6. Passing through the valley of Baca. Does anybody know where the valley of Baca is? I don't. In fact, I've read a lot. As far as I know, no one does. Because apparently it's not a place. The valley of Baca refers to the idea of weeping and crying and heartache and pain. Baca refers to balsam trees, that the sap comes out of the balsam trees and it looks like tears rolling down the trunk of the tree. And so the trees represented to them a mournful, a painful, dismal part of life that you cry. And so when he says this, and says passing through the valley of Baca, it means through sorrow and pain, they make it a spring. They change it. Yes, there's a hope inside of them. There's something different inside of them. So rather than being that place of pain that we all go through, they bring something different to it. And he says, and the early rain also covers it with, there it comes again, blessing. They go from strength to strength. Every one of them appears before God in Zion. They reach their destination because of what God has done in their life. Would you pray with me? And Heavenly Father, so many times it's difficult to be filled with hope and to worship you and to praise you because we just get caught up in who we are and how our life has worked out and whether it's gone according to our plans or somehow what we thought was going to happen, what we hoped would happen, has been left behind. It's been crushed in the wake of life. So, dear Heavenly Father, would you come? Teach us something different. Give us strength to believe you and trust you, even if we find ourselves in the valley of Baca, in the place of tears, mourning, feeling of lost. And I thank you that if we're going through that, we're not the first. We won't be the last. I thank you that you have promised that you have not forgotten about us, and that you will make a way. And that in our struggle, in our difficulty, that we have you to turn to look to, and to find the strength that we need. Find the promise of the destination. And to know that in this journey, you are trying to shape us into what you want us to be, what we could be, if you were at the center of our life. If you're here and you've never given your heart to Jesus Christ, Jesus is the fulfillment of all of this. He's all of the promise and the pointing and the direction that's ahead come to life, put on flesh and blood, to be your rescuer and my rescuer, so that we would be filled with hope. We would have someone who is with us, who we know we can trust. He is going to shape us, even if it's painful. He is not deserting us. He doesn't leave us behind, but he continues to shape us. It all comes to life and reality in Jesus himself. If you've never opened up your heart to him, for 2,000 years, people have been recognizing who he is and finding that he is the way, the path that we need. In his name we pray.